During the book of Shmuel, we're up to what's called the second chapter. We learned about how Shmuel was born after the blessing of Eli, the Kohen Gadol. And Shmuel remains to learn by Eli. Shmuel is a Levite, the descendant of Korach. And Shmuel is learning the ways of Hashem. He will ultimately be a great prophet, quite possibly the greatest prophet we ever had. He is juxtaposed with Moshe and Aaron, and Chazal understand that to mean that he was equal to Moshe plus Aaron. So he was a tremendous, tremendous prophet, whatever that means. What?
I can't believe he's sure that he was as good as
Moshe. Okay, I hear that. Whatever that means. If you want, see our class in the Meiri's book, Seder HaKabbalah, where the Meiri discusses what did Chazal mean when they said that Bilam was a greater prophet than Moshe. And when you see that Meiri, then I think this Chazal will also make more sense. Saying, so in order to understand this, why don't you see that? And then come back. Okay. This deserves a long discussion. Bezrat Hashem, Thursday in 10 days, bring it up. So the sons of Eli used to walk around with a pitchfork, and they made the following rule, that they'd send their lad. Whenever someone had meat, he would come with that pitchfork, bang on their pot, and say, "I stick in my pitchfork. Whatever comes up," which is obviously going to be probably the biggest piece of meat, "that's what us Kohanim get." And people would say, you know, you're not allowed to eat the meat of the sacrifices before the fats were offered on the altar. And the person would say, "Wait until I finish with my sacrifice and then take the meat." And the lad would say, "No, we're taking the meat fresh. And if you don't, we're going to take it by force. We're the police force over here. We run the temple." Now, what happens when people who represent religion use force immorally, corruptly, is that they do what's called a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name, where people look at the whole concept of serving Hashem as something that's all about profit, all about money, and they're really destroying, they're desecrating the name of Hashem, and one can transgress the prohibition of chilul Hashem in many ways. You know, if a person wears a yarmulke and he cuts a line or he drives like a maniac, so people look at him and they say, "What's being Jewish all about?" That's the way a Jew behaves. Chilul Hashem can happen in many ways. Chilul Hashem is in front of 10 Jews. You could be in front of a group of rabbis and what you do is called a Chilul Hashem. Chilul Hashem doesn't have to be in front of other people. People sometimes think, it's a chilul Hashem if the non-learned, non-religious see me doing this. Well, chilul Hashem is in front of religious and non-religious alike. Chilul means the desecration. So if a person wearing a yarmulke, if a person does things and people look at him and say, "Look at how a Jew behaves, look at how a religious Jew behaves." If he does things and people look down at the religion because of that, that's called a chilul Hashem. And every person on their level. The Talmud says that there was a rabbi who said about himself, "If I buy on credit, that's called a chilul Hashem. If the butcher has to chase after me to pay, so people look at me and say, 'What's wrong with the rabbi? He doesn't pay cash.'" So on his level, that was chilul Hashem. Another rabbi, Rabbi Yochanan, said that on his level, if he was ever seen without his tefillin, that was a chilul Hashem. The tefillin represent being a God-fearing person. If he's ever going to be seen without his tefillin, so that's a chilul Hashem. So every person on their level. I often say that certain people are on such a level that if they show up to a 9 o'clock minyan, that's a chilul Hashem. People expect that, why is he at a 9 o'clock minyan? It's a tough call because people also know that very often you have people staying up to 1, 2 o'clock in the morning learning, sometimes 3 o'clock in the morning learning, sometimes 4 o'clock in the morning learning. Well, they're going to show up, you know, if they should show up to a 9 o'clock minyan. I remember I was once up all night learning Shavuos, and then my grandfather was visiting by us, so I wanted to accompany him to davening. So he went to daven at 8. So I came home at 5:30. I slept till 7:30, 2 hours. And then I got up to go walk my grandfather and daven with him. So I show up to the 8 o'clock minyan, and some older people look at me and say, "You're a young man. Shouldn't you be up learning Torah all night?" You know, I was up learning Torah all night. In their mind, you know, what are you doing at an 8 o'clock minyan? This is for old fogies like us. What are you doing here? So Chil Hashem has to be gauged based on what are people going to think also. But these guys were really doing a Chil Hashem, you know, sending their lad around, taking the meat by force, taking the meat irrespective of whether it was permissible yet or not. So that's why the Navi describes it, that they blasphemed the altar of God, they blasphemed the offerings of God. And Shmuel, he was doing things faithfully. Every time his mother would come up to the temple, she would bring him a little coat. She would sew him a coat, an apron, which was a sign of a prophet, of a Levite, of one who is dedicated to Hashem. Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife. And so Elkanah had 3 sons and 2 daughters. And as Eli was getting old, and he heard of what his sons were doing, he tried rebuking them. He says, "Why are you doing this? I hear your reputation is bad. This isn't right. If a person does something wrong with Hashem, so he could rectify. But if a person does something wrong to his fellow man, how is he going to ever make amends?" But they didn't listen. And the Navi says God already wanted them dead. Now, the Navi over here does something which we will see time and again in the Navi. And that is that when the Navi wants to describe their sins, the Navi uses very harsh terms. The wording of the Navi we'll quote in a minute, but first we have to understand where it's coming from. Our tradition is that one of the sins that the sons of Eli did was that they would delay the offerings of the women. Meaning after a woman has a child, so she has to bring a chatas offering, and only after that is she completely pure. And being that they were running the temple in a manner that wasn't so efficient, so when the women would bring a sacrifice, they weren't confident that it's going to be brought the way it should be unless they were there ensuring that it was. And so the women would stick around an extra night because things weren't being run efficiently because they were too busy eating up their meat. So the women would have to stick around an extra night where they wouldn't go home because they wanted to ensure that their sacrifice was brought properly. So you had a situation where the husband was home watching the kids, and instead of the wife coming right back home, she'd spend the night at the temple. The Navi describes it as though they would sleep with the women who would come to the temple. And that's how the Navi describes their sin. Our tradition is that the Navi uses terminology like that to express how harsh their sin was in the eyes of Hashem. Our tradition is that although the Navi uses these words, that's not what the Navi means. The Navi means to say, the fact that they prevented the wives from being home with their husbands that extra night, that's described by the Navi as though they themselves would sleep with the women, with the married women.
Well, in a way, it's sort of like that, because if after they get home from bringing the sacrifice, the woman is pure for the first time in a long time, it's as if they're stealing the night away from the husband, which is a big deal.
Okay.
Not only that, in my opinion, it touches on something I wanted to talk about in that last part of the lecture, which was jealousy. And isn't the husband at home wondering, is his wife at the temple, and these guys, what is she really just giving an offering and sticking around?
Do they have rooms? Does she have to sleep on the floor? Do they stay up the whole night, or...?
I don't know. They probably had some kind of tent out there, but I don't know.
We're born in a generation that have a temple. We won't know until we build it.
Yeah.
I can understand why the Torah is cryptic, but why the authors of the rest of the Tanakh, why not just plainly just say it out, like what they really mean, instead of like in these
confused Gentiles?
That deserves a long discussion. We have to remember that the understanding is that you don't learn Tanakh without a tradition. The given of Tanakh was that you will first go learn by a Rebbe, you will learn the tradition, and just like I presented it first by describing the story of what happened, and then I presented what the Tanakh says. Isn't that the reverse from what you'd expect? Shouldn't I have began by saying this is what the Navi says, and then say our tradition is such and such? No. The assumption of Chazal is that when you learn Tanakh, you first learn the tradition, and then you learn the words. So there's a code, there's a method of learning Tanakh, and there's a code as to why certain things are expressed a certain way. The question begins with the Torah. The Torah says an eye for an eye. Our tradition is, yeah, but our tradition is it's not an eye for an eye. So why did God say it that way?
It's God, though. This is human beings writing this.
But it's human beings having prophecy writing this. It's not a guy who just felt like writing a story. This isn't Shakespeare. So it deserves a broader discussion. I just don't want to leave it completely hanging. So I'm beginning an answer. But in truth, it deserves a longer answer. It deserves a much longer answer. It deserves like 5 or 6 classes. Just to understand the concept of Pshuto Shel Mikra, what is the weight of a verse, the way it's simply understood. We'd have to learn a Rambam, Prima Gadim. There's a ton of material we'd have to learn to properly address this question, and we're not yet holding there. So for now, let's leave it at that, with the clause that on a different occasion, we're going to have to expand on this much more. We got 1 minute left, so let's deal with questions after class. So a prophet comes to Eli, and our tradition is that this prophet was Elkanah, which is a terrible thought. The very person who blessed Elkanah that he would have kids, Eli the Kohen, blessed Elkanah that he would have children, and the blessing came true. And now Elkanah has to be the prophet to come back and tell Eli the following rebuke. So says Hashem, I appeared to your forefather back in Egypt and chose him from all the tribes to serve before me. And I gave him the responsibility of all the sacrifices. Why do you kick at my altar? Why do you kick at my sacrifices? You honor your children more than me, taking the food for yourself. That's why, so says Hashem, I thought your family would lead the way of priesthood before me forever, and now, no way. Those who scorn me, says Hashem, they fall by the wayside. Time is going to come when your strength is going to be uprooted from the temple, and you are cursed that no one in your family will reach longevity. You will watch as all of Israel has good times, and your family has it bad. No one in your family for generations will live out a long life. The sign that this curse is going to come true is that your two sons, Hophni and Pinchas, will die on the same day. And I will establish a trusted Kohen who will do what I want. And I will build a trusted temple. And my trusted Kohen will walk before my anointed one, before my king forever. And whatever remnant will be from your family will have to come begging by him. And they'll ask, let us join the priesthood and serve together with you. And this is the curse that reflects the sin. They treated the temple as though they owned the temple. They walked around and said, we're going to take what we want by force. And Hashem says, I'm going to show them. They're going to be the dregs of society. They're going to be the dregs of the temple. They're going to have to beg to join. I'm going to appoint new leadership in the temple. And this is terrible if you think about it. Elkanah got all his blessing from Eli, and he is trusted with the job to come and tell Eli this curse. Now, what? Excellent question. So Chazal say that what God held against Eli was that Eli should have rebuked them more harshly, meaning he rebuked them, but he could have done more. He could have kicked them out of their post. He could have said, if this is the way you're behaving, there's no way I'm leaving you as Kohanim to serve in the temple. God's honor is far more important than your honor. If you misbehave like this, you're not going to serve here. So Chazal say he should have taken a stronger stance against his son to protect God's name. There's an interesting point within the curse. Hashem says, the sign is that the two sons will die on one day. So we're going to see how that comes true. Now, the story continues. Eli goes to rest in the evening, and he's starting to lose his eyesight. And Shmuel is lying near the temple, and Hashem appears with the first prophecy to Shmuel. And Hashem appears the same way he appears to Moshe. The first time Hashem appears to Moshe, he appears with his father's voice. Moshe thinks it's his father talking to him. And so the first time that God is going to appear to Shmuel, he appears with the same voice as Eli. And so Hashem appears and tells Shmuel, calls out Shmuel, and Shmuel goes running to Eli and says, "Here I am, you called me." And Eli says, "I didn't call you, go back, lie down." Same thing happens the second time. Hashem calls Shmuel, and Shmuel runs to Eli and says, "You called me," because he did hear Eli's voice. That's how Hashem appeared, so as not to scare him. And Eli says, "I didn't call you." And the same thing happens a third time. But this time, Eli has an inkling of what's going on, and so we'll pick up Ezrat Hashem next week.